Welcome back to Sustainability Street, our podcast on the intersection of commercial real estate and the world we live in. I'm your host, Therese Fitzgerald. To mark this year's Earth Day, I've invited Marta Schantz of the Urban Land Institute back on the program to discuss the state of commercial real estate sustainability, the progress, and the potential for further improvement. As co-executive director of the Randall Lewis Center for Sustainability in Real Estate, Schantz has her finger on the pulse of everything to do with reducing the environmental impacts of the built environment. She is a self-professed climate nerd, and her knowledge and enthusiasm make her the ideal guest for this Earth Day episode. Here's my interview. Hi, Marta. Thanks for coming back to Sustainability Street for our Earth Day 2024 episode.
Well, and thank you for having me. Delighted to be a part of your Earth Day podcast.
Marta, when we look at the past year and look ahead, there is a lot to talk about.
Yes, there is.
So in your opinion, how has real estate sustainability progressed over the past year? What were some of the positive signs?
You know, one thing that I am overwhelmingly seeing from the real estate industry over the past year, specifically around sustainability, is that folks are getting very strategic to make decarbonization pencil, to make net zero goals realistic and pragmatic. They are doing decarb audits instead of just energy audits. They're phasing their MEP replacements with equipment life cycles in a very strategic way, focused on electrification. They're exploring every green financial vehicle that exists today to make it work with the way that interest rates are, with the way that transactions are slowing. Folks are getting very strategic, where it used to be a little easier, a little more low-hanging fruit available. Now folks have to think a little harder, and they're doing it well. They're getting really strategic to make it pencil.
And I guess that reflects a greater awareness of all the options.
Absolutely. I would say that the sustainability vernacular of the average real estate professional is much stronger than it was just a few years ago, especially with the SEC ruling coming out around transition risk and climate risk, especially with all of these local policies around building performance coming out. The average real estate professional is just smarter on sustainability than they were before.
Speaking of the SEC, last month it came out with the final version of its climate disclosure rule, 2 years after first proposing it. You've described the rule as an opportunity for members of the real estate industry. How does the new rule, which received considerable pushback, present an opportunity?
Well, the opportunity is that measuring and assessing climate risk is good for business. If companies haven't been doing this yet, this SEC ruling provides the nudge they may have needed to start. It's an adoption curve, right? Where the part of the point of policy in general, including this SEC disclosure ruling, is to bring about the laggards, the leaders, the fast followers in the real estate industry. They're already incorporating climate risk into decision-making, and they're benefiting from it. But the rest of the industry, the rest of that adoption curve is being accelerated by this policy passage.
And in January, the White House and the Department of Buildings released a draft of its national definition for zero emissions buildings. Do you think the voluntary standard will bring the clarity and consistency to decarbonization efforts, as is the intention?
I think any effort to bring along the masses on the journey to net zero is incredibly laudable. It's admirable. And what the White House is doing, what it looks like their proposed definition is going to be, is very much a definition for today. This is meant to be approachable and achievable, and I'm really excited to see how it plays out in the market, which certifications body will align to it, which companies will set goals against it, which municipalities or local governments will offer incentives for it. It's got a lot of potential.
Yeah, it's very exciting. I think it is something the market has been waiting for. And this year you hosted a webinar on green leasing. What is the pace or frequency of landlords engaging tenants and or tenants engaging landlords on sustainability?
It is only increasing. Therese, there's more pressure than ever for landlords to collaborate with tenants and tenants to collaborate with landlords on sustainability and decarbonization in particular, to get whole building data, to see whole building improvements, to meet net zero goals. And so We at ULI, we've been following the Green Lease Leaders Initiative since it started 10 years ago. The U.S. Department of Energy has been running this initiative, and the Institute for Market Transformation supports it. It's in its 10th year, which is incredible. It really set the U.S. as a leader on this front compared to the rest of the globe. It started with just 14 companies recognized as Green Lease Leaders the first year. It's up to 65 this year. Wow. So there's a lot of momentum, and you actually can't win annually. So the total is even higher than that 65. To be honest, we're seeing more of the impetus come from landlords than we are from tenants. But there are certainly tenants, particularly those who have mission-driven organizations or who have their own net zero goals, like these big tech companies, who are very much pushing from their end too. At ULI, we've got a primer on net zero leasing, the idea of going beyond green leasing to achieve that specific goal. Because when you think about it, today more than ever, we need the persistence of performance. Like, green leasing is great. Net zero leasing is the future. And so thinking about cost share provisions for ongoing persistence of performance, thinking about technical performance specs, thinking about on and offsite renewable energy agreements, all of this is different aspects of leasing that we're seeing being adopted and innovating in real time.
I spoke to Diana Lee and Martha Thalheimer of IMT for an episode I did on green leasing. And I agree, the data is really encouraging. There is a human element to Earth Day. It includes making the planet healthier for people and more inclusive. But over the past year, DEI has become a politicized term. How has that pushback impacted efforts to address environmental injustices?
You know, we talked about this on our ULI DEI survey webinar just earlier this year. It is really frustrating that DEI is becoming a politicized term. And it's also frustrating that we're seeing what we're calling DEI fatigue amongst companies. It's one of those things where the numbers prove that DEI is beneficial to business. Like, the stats abound. And so it's one of those things where it takes a little more education. It takes that commitment and that vision to see it through. And when it comes to environmental justice and those environmental injustices you mentioned, I mean, you see it just as much as we do. Marginalized communities experience the effects of climate change first and worst. They're often right. shut out of the environmental and economic and social benefits of the net zero transition. And so real estate has a role here, right? In achieving net zero, no matter the politicization of DEI or not, in achieving net zero and building community, right? We want to build this well-being. We want to situate the industry to address these intersecting challenges, right? We have leadership in sustainability. We have leadership in equity. And there's so many opportunities to implement equitable decarb strategies in partnership with community stakeholders and demonstrating that transformative capacity. So we see a lot of opportunity here. We're starting to see leadership already by some innovative firms. And we actually have a report about this called Net Zero for All, a Just Transition for Real Estate, that goes into specific examples of how firms can take action.
And last year, we talked about anti-ESG rhetoric and the challenges that that was presenting. Has that died down? I feel like I don't hear about it as much.
I wish I could say otherwise, but it hasn't. Real estate firms are stuck still between this rock and a hard place where they have pushback from more conservative funds and states and that don't want anything to do with the letters E, S, and G. And then they've got push from the opposite end of investors and funds who want the greenest of performance or they're out. Mm. And the crux of it is that green funds outperform brown funds. There are more studies to prove it than I can count. It right, it's real estate firm's fiduciary duty to continue this decision-making and implementation of an ESG strategy so that the fund can be as successful as possible. You can tell I'm getting worked up about this.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, though, like the anti-ESG rhetoric is still there, and folks are still having to be pretty careful about how they talk about ESG and how they share their work publicly about it. Behind the scenes, it's still happening because it's good business. In front of the scenes, on stage, there's a little green hushing.
Yeah. Hopefully next year when we talk, that will be.
Ugh, let's hope so.
The theme of this year's Earth Day is planet versus plastics. And commercial real estate construction uses plastics and a lot of other materials. What progress is commercial real estate making in addressing embodied carbon and the circular economy?
There is so much progress. If we think about the operational carbon movement, maybe over the past 20, 30 years, we've seen as much effort and movement across the operational carbon side of things. As we've seen in the past, like 3 to 5 for embodied carbon, it is accelerating so quickly. And there's so much progress and so much stakeholder engagement from across the industry. We've got this ECHO project that the Carbon Leadership Forum is now leading, the embodied carbon harmonization and optimization effort to bring together and align efforts with measurement for life cycle carbon assessments. We're seeing increased adoption of the EC3 tool for embodied carbon calculations and construction, which is this free tool for measuring embodied carbon of a development. We're seeing goals set by the architecture industry, Architecture 2030, the MEP industry, MEP 2040, the structural engineers with SE 2050. All of the stakeholders are bought in to reducing embodied carbon. ULI just published a report about this as well, called The Materials Movement, that looks at the business case for real estate to really accelerate its use of better building materials, both on materials health and carbon emissions of materials. And there's just a lot of exciting innovations that are no longer like future use. They're available today. They're like commercial, off-the-shelf, innovative materials that support reductions in embodied carbon. And then there's also the circular economy to think of. And with that, we think about designing for disassembly with new construction to have those more flexible future-proof buildings. We think about materials reuse with demolitions of materials. We think about materials reuse in tenant fit-outs and reusing the furniture and fixtures and doors and everything else. It's really exciting. And then even beyond that, we're seeing real estate developers start to measure and report against this. So for the first time this past year, our ULI Green Print real estate community members started voluntarily reporting the embodied carbon of their developments too. When you've got folks benchmarking and reporting these things, like it's a real movement. It makes me really happy to see this progress.
Yeah, it does seem like there's a lot of brain power behind the embodied carbon. And speaking of the circular economy, I would say there's a lot more talk today about adaptive reuse and conversions. What are the sustainability implications of that trend?
Oh, they're tremendous. The embodied carbon savings alone are great, whether it's adaptive reuse or conversion project. And then the renovation as well provides an opportunity for highly energy efficient and sustainable design choices too. So you've got those operational improvements as well. There's this tool that was developed by some fellows from Architecture 2030 called the CARE tool. I'm not sure if you're familiar with it, the Carbon Avoided Retrofit Estimator, CARE. And it's a more sophisticated than a back of the envelope, but still pretty simple way to calculate the carbon that you're avoiding by renovating or redeveloping as opposed to demolishing and building new. Really excited for folks to be able to use that and actually measure the carbon savings from their adaptive reuse or conversions projects. And I should say that, I mean, not every building is right for a conversion, right? We've seen reports from Gensler. ULI has a report called Behind the Facade, specifically around the feasibility of converting commercial real estate to multifamily. And it's what, 10% of office buildings are really eligible-ish for a multifamily conversion. So we've got to think about other ways to make this work and to think about how we can help these obsolescent buildings have a new life.
Yeah, it's definitely a challenge. So what are we leaving out? What other challenges is CRE facing? What other opportunities are there?
So one thing that we haven't talked about yet is the Inflation Reduction Act funding from the US federal government. I mean, when that launched a year and a half ago, everyone was so hopeful and so excited. And then it's been kind of crickets from the real estate sector. Other sectors have been able to use the funds for one reason or another, but the real estate sector overall has been slower to adopt these Inflation Reduction Act funds than other sectors. Part of it's because it's complicated. Part of it is because of the tax credit transfer. There are all sorts of reasons why it's been slow for to have this adoption, but there are so many provisions within the Inflation Reduction Act that real estate can take advantage of. Some are straight grants, some are tax credits. I encourage everyone listening to just take a look at the US Green Building Council's summary of the IRA provisions and how you could save significant dollars on your investments and see if it's worth it for your developments. Just we're not seeing enough folks look into this seriously and take advantage of this incredible opportunity.
Why do you think that is?
Definitely a little bit of lack of education, but also it's so different from anything else, right? It's not just a simple utility rebate. It's not a simple even like government development, policy incentive for bonus FAR or something. It's a little more complicated because taxes are involved. So you need to have your tax consultant look at it. You need to get your pro forma to be like updated a little bit to incorporate these different considerations. And once you do, you see like the huge wealth of value that can be creative out of this, but it takes those extra steps to really understand the math and understand the opportunity.
Well, Marta, other than recording this interview, how will you be celebrating Earth Day?
Oh, I love Earth Day. I mean, personally, with my two young boys, we'll do some sort of park cleanup, and we'll take our compost to a fancy compost plant or something. But ULI in particular, we're celebrating Earth Day with the launch of our second physical climate risk report with LaSalle Investment Management. We're really excited about it. It's all about physical climate risk and underwriting practices and assets and portfolios. So keep an eye out. We're launching it.
I will.
We're launching it. And it just the idea around physical climate risk data collection and disclosure, it's part of the SEC ruling, number one. So it's useful to know how to do it in general, but it's just best practice these days to incorporate it into your underwriting for asset level and portfolio level. And for ULI to be able to partner with LaSalle and share this with our members is pretty phenomenal.
Okay. Well, thank you for being here. It's always a pleasure.
Thanks again. Happy Earth Day.
Bye-bye. And thank you, listeners, for joining me on Sustainability Street. If you have any questions about this episode or suggestions for future episodes, please reach out to me at therese.fitzgerald@cpe-mhn.com. And don't forget to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. And before you go, I want to tell you about an opportunity. The CPE Executive Council is a group of industry leaders who exchange ideas about trending real estate concerns, and those discussions are later posted on our website. If you're interested in joining the council, please contact Editor-in-Chief Jessica Fuhr at jessica.fuhr@cpe-mhn.com. Bye for now.